It's Monday, August 26th, and this is Season 4, Episode 4 of the 4-Star Spurs Podcast. I'm your host, Tommy. With me this week are Nate.
Hey.
Kevin.
What's up, guys?
Anthony.
How's it going?
And we got Sam, who is on the panel and producing as well.
No pressure.
Of course not. It's all right. Don't worry. You'll sink.
He'll do okay.
Maybe swim. But, Kevin, we actually have a question for our icebreaker.
Yes, Suge, long-time listener, always sends good questions. He talks about, you know, normal Newcastle stuff, but he wanted to point out we had the Rev in town this weekend from Minnesota, so we want to know if we enjoyed our time with him at the bar yesterday.
Well, I definitely did, and we actually all went out to lunch afterwards, but I just want to give him a little bit of respect because he came to Chicago. Tom Carruthers, he's the guy that does like the prayer thing at Minnesota where they like baptize people with Malort and all that stuff. It's pretty wild. You should give them a follow. But he came in to watch the Cubs as well, to watch Cubs and Tottenham, and the Cubs got swept at home and then Tottenham lost. So I just want to say I'm sorry Chicago was not as kind to you as we would have liked it to be, but I hope you had a good time regardless.
Can I just ask, people drink Malort in Minnesota?
Yes. Yeah. They do it for every game or win or I'm not sure what.
They got it from here. He came here one game and we gave him Malort.
So it's just Minnesota Spurs. They drink. Yeah. I love that that's the effect that we had on them.
Yeah. It's been pretty great. Spread it down the Midwest.
Well, to be fair, it kind of lines up the whole Minnesota roots. Because Malort is a Swedish thing.
That's true.
And Minnesota, for those who don't know, is
very Viking-y.
Malort is not a Swedish thing. Malort is a Chicago
it's
thing.
It's originally Swedish.
If you go to Stockholm and ask for Malort...
No, they won't know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's rooted in the owner's name is Jepson?
It's not like, sweet. There's Swedish... As much as Minnesota is tied to Sweden as Malort is tied to Sweden. Right now. They have a football team there for the Vikings. Malort sounds Swedish-ish.
Do they eat lutefisk there as well, or is that just
North
Dakota?
Yeah, they do. Actually, I think they do, yeah. I'm pretty sure they do.
What are we talking about?
Yeah, but sorry. Anyway, it was great to take in a game with him. It was really nice to meet him again. I think we've all met him before. He's been out here several times.
Yeah,
a lot of us have been to the game, but...
Yeah, if you're in Minneapolis, go to the Nomad to watch with them. They are a great group.
Yes.
Yeah.
And for anybody in Minneapolis, Anthony did give Tom a good stack of podcast cards. So please take one. If you already subscribed, pass it to a friend. Because the more the merrier. But
if they're listening now, they probably already know about us. But that's okay.
That's why to pass it on. But thank you. Okay, but on to the next item. Anthony, we have an announcement.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this. We recently had the opportunity, a group reached out to us called the Big Head Podcast Network, and they asked us to join their group. They're trying to get a collection of podcasts together. They're setting up I'm really excited about the fact that they're setting up a podcast store for us, so you'll be able to buy... once it's set up and running, we'll let you know and shoot out some messages. But you'll be able to buy our merchandise, so our logo on hats and shirts and whatever you want to put it on.
Whatever.
Yeah, whatever you want to put it on.
Breakfast
you can put
cereal,
our logo on
flamethrowers.
And buy it. And we get some of the proceeds, and this great network get some of those proceeds. And they're really offering us great opportunities. We're going to have some ads on the shows moving forward. We're going to promo some other podcasts, but it's going to be a great experience for us, and we get some say in what we put onto the podcast. So we're not going to have any like Arsenal ads or something like that. We're not going to do shit like that.
Or random Blue Chew commercials.
Yeah. So it's very exciting for us. It's going to bring in some revenue for the podcast and help us keep our equipment working, so we can be here for you each week.
Awesome. Thank you, Anthony. So everybody, stay tuned. This will be, I think, or at least from my end, I'm very excited about this opportunity. We had some communication back and forth, and they're very receptive. So, enjoy. Okay, so next up is the worst part of the podcast. We review yesterday's match. So, we lost 1-0 to Newcastle at home. Kevin, we got a question from Suge. Pretty succinct, I would say, but... let's start off with that.
Yeah, the other part of his question was basically, he said, what the fuck was that? I hate to see insert Cook at the Atlantic happy on something that isn't a Cubs win. Just disappointed. Hopefully we figure it out at the NLD next week. So basically he's just like, what the hell happened?
Yeah. So Nate, Kevin, Anthony, Sam, what the fuck?
Is it really much of a what the fuck? I mean, we haven't beat Newcastle in North London since Bale was around. And I know that doesn't count the last two seasons since we got him at Wembley. But we can't act like this hasn't happened before. And I think the question out of that is that a good thing or a bad thing in the way that we have been able to bounce back from performances like this before? Or is it different this time? I think that's the main question we need to figure out after a game like that, because it was, I mean, it wasn't a game where we had a ton of chances and just it didn't go in. It wasn't like a Tim Krul game. It was just, it looked like we just couldn't get our shit together the whole match. And they got one chance, they put it away, and we didn't create nearly enough, and they just were able to shut us down the entire time, despite having all the possession in the world. So I think that's the main question. Is this a one-off? Can we get everybody kind of motivated to push on from this, or is this kind of, does it feel different?
You hit the nail on the head talking about creating. We did no creating at all. We had no creativity on the pitch. It basically felt like, I mean, with how deep Newcastle was, especially once they got the goal, I mean, it was, you could argue it's hard to find space in that, but like, you got to be able to create something. And all we were doing was passing around the top of the box, trying to get it to Danny Rose to send in a terrible ball. It was very hard to watch because you just felt like if we just had something, like Dele or an Eriksen, and even when Eriksen came on, he didn't really do anything. But I think it showed that we really missed Dele.
Well, and Kevin, it was so congested in the middle. It seemed like we didn't have any answer to that. Nobody was driving the ball towards the line to try and cut it back, to try and create something in the box, or at least mix things up a bit. Like it felt like both wings, like both, I guess, wing backs or both Danny and Walker Peters just seemed like they were afraid to drive to the line at all. And none of the fast players that we had on there. We talked about this last week that we didn't think that we should put two fast players in, like the Sun and Mora, on the attack. One or the other, yes, but that we were going to need to find other creative ways to break down a team that was probably going to park the bus on us. And we went with that pretty much the whole game. These two ineffective, speedy guys that really weren't accomplishing much up there.
Yeah, there was like. We were so predictable the whole game long, like, and it's been the story for a while now when teams set up like that. It's like, we have the ball, we have it in their final third, we pass it around the edge of their 18-yard box, but there's nowhere to go because they have 4-4, like, just set up there. And we just could not break them down. And there was a really good article in The Athletic yesterday, I think it was, that was analyzing, like, why we just can't do it. And, like, We've spoken about this before. Like, it's taken a lot of last 20-minute goals after teams have set up like this, and we're gonna expect teams to set up like this. But the conclusion that The Athletic came to, and it's one that I sort of agree with, is that we really miss when we had Walker and Rose at their like peak, bombing down the wings, because teams could set up like that, but we had these fullbacks that could just like hammer in behind no matter what, and then they had to spread their shape apart. Mm-hmm. Like, and we just don't have that now. So setting up, and I totally agree, setting up with both Lucas and Son as well as Kane, like, we sort of got what we're asking for.
There was no connection between the front three, and it's a question I think we haven't had the luxury of asking, because it hasn't been in a situation that much. But if you remember the beginning of last season, there were a lot of questions asked if Lucas and Kane can really play together. They seemed to be kind of a little bit disjointed. It would be like, well, whether one was playing well, but the other one would not really play well when they were together. There was like, aside from the United away game. But at home, there was that problem. And then Kane got hurt, or Lucas was out of the team, and you really, really didn't have that question anymore. But you saw it again, where either Kane was ended up having to come way too deep, and then when the ball was in the play out in the wings, he wasn't in the box, or there weren't anyone in the box. And everyone was just seemed to be like kind of idly, like just kind of fucking just fucking about on the edge of the box the whole time, watching Winks and Sissoko pass it to each other. And there was really no movement, and there was no kind of impetus to break those lines with a ball in. And then when we could do it, the pass wouldn't come off.
Or Lucas skied it from 6 yards.
That's true as well. Yeah, that happened a couple of times.
The thing that I want to lead in right now is actually a question from Kyle Mates. And my biggest issue, it's not an issue on Newcastle's part. They did what they had to do to win. But they had five at the back. After they scored the goal, they aggressively parked the bus, kept their shape. But it's always been our Achilles heel. Like Aston Villa, for example, until we scored, we were unable to dislodge them. In the past in general, we just suck at it. So, Kevin, what did Kyle Mates have to say?
He said, so we all knew Newcastle was going to park the bus, and we looked like we weren't prepared for it. Is this a fault of the players not executing or Poch's tactics?
I'll tackle that and say I do blame Poch for this, because I think we all talked about it last week that this type of like speed on the counter wasn't going to matter when they were parking like this. Like we need to have both Lamella and Eriksen in there. Lo Celso probably instead of Winks.
Poch just said he's like not even close to fit.
Or Sissoko, and that certainly could be the case. But we needed somebody with some more creativity in the middle, and we needed to plan on having those fullbacks like push forward. Like they needed to get far forward. We have to count on the fact that they're only going to be trying to get us on the counter anyway. So as long as we had Sanchez there to get back on them and defend, then we could get forward. But they weren't getting forward, so I don't get it.
I'm going to say both, and I'm going to add a third as well. And especially because Rick's not on the podcast, so I can like fully get this out. I'd blame a little bit on Levy as well. I think Poch is in a little bit of a predicament. He doesn't know which players are going to be around, who he's going to be able to rely on. Who knows? Levy could be telling him not to start Eriksen.
Oh, I don't. That's bullshit.
You don't think that that's possible? If we're trying to sell him?
I don't think he would listen. I don't think Daniel Levy would put him in that position. I think this is all Poch with the players.
I think to say that it's, I mean, I don't know.
I think Levy's one of the most ruthless people ever. So I think I wouldn't. Levy would definitely tell him not to do it.
Even was pretty ruthless about Wanyama, too, with the pending transfer. So I'm not surprised.
I mean, Wanyama's not affecting that game.
No, I know, but more or less.
That was what Poch said, not Levy.
Yes. No, but what I'm trying to say is with Pochettino, it's. He has you know, he has total control of the team, so if he wants somebody in, they'll stay in. If not, they're pretty much dead to him.
Right, exactly.
And so it's like, it's very hard to bring somebody back from the outskirts, so I don't know.
Well, it's happened, though. I mean, Toby's playing, right? Remember, we went a whole season without him playing for no reason.
Yeah.
He came back into the team. I think the thing with Pochettino in these situations is when he first came in and he did this, we all lauded him for it because it got Kabul and Lennon and Adebayor out of the squad, and we saw guys like Kane and Mason step up. And Vertonghen kind of got his groove back and became a world-class center back out of that, and we kind of pushed from there. And he's tried to do it again, and when it works, it's great. And when it doesn't, he needs to take flack for it. And right now, it's not working because – even talking about Vertonghen, that goal that we gave up, I don't think that happens with Vertonghen in the side.
Right.
I mean, Sanchez was miles off. And I'm really high on Sanchez, but he was miles off Joe Linton for that goal. And that was an embarrassing goal to give up.
Yeah, Joe Linton is not good. Not good.
And he averages a goal every four games.
And he was like, Norwich made him look like John Solarco level of bad. He scored against us, and it was... like that still footage of Sanchez being that far off of him, and there's no one else around.
No, there's
that
no other Newcastle player
marking
there
as well. And it nearly happened again in the second half as well. Like Sanchez was miles off the pace, and like he's still young, and centre back is a position where you can use that as an excuse because like positioning is everything in centre back. But like he was awful on Sunday, and. We just could not create anything against a bad team.
A very bad team.
I'm not in full-blown panic stations yet because, obviously, historically, under Potch, we've always started slowly.
Yep.
And we never get good until even October. We just somehow scrape results. It just seems that this year it might be tougher, that even if we get really good in October, we won't have scraped the results because other teams have figured out how to play against them. So something's got to change.
Well, for me, like this is Newcastle at home early in the season when we're chasing like a title race down the road and we're 6 points behind the top of the table. This is going to be three of those points.
You're very optimistic there, by the way.
Well, that is pretty optimistic given what I saw this past week. But this is a game you have to win, and to not have any way to even come back and get the draw at the end. It was pathetic. It really was pathetic. I don't think I've seen a game that I felt this bad about after watching in a long time. I mean, like West Ham getting the first win against us last season at the new White Hart Lane, that wasn't great. But this was just a poor, lousy team that showed up and did the minimal and still managed to eke out 3 points against us. So, it's sickening.
It reminded me of kind of the couple of Wigan home losses we had in the Redknapp and AVB times. I don't know if anybody remembers those. Very similar, where we couldn't do anything. And that's what a lot of it reminded me. A lot of it reminded me of AVB ball, where we kind of were passing and hoping for a screamer. And that was really all we had. Honestly, we had I heard a lot of people talking kind of about how Kyle Walker-Peters was one of the better players. I completely disagree with that. I thought
he was
awful.
The first 20 minutes, he was
okay. I mean, it was a guy that looked like he either didn't know what to do or was too afraid to do anything. I think there was a moment in the first half where he had this long kind of winding run where he went back two or three players and he got near the box. And instead of, like, making a decisive run or a decisive pass, he kind of just turned around and passed it backwards and waited for people to come back for him. And you saw that within everybody. There's no, like, we're going to go to MVP, LVP. I don't even know because they were all shit.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a collective fuck-up. And I don't know if it's the worst I've ever seen you play, but it's one of the more disappointing results. Because you saw Arsenal drop points. You saw Man United drop points at home. You could really put yourself in position here. And this is another thing we do all the time, is when other teams fuck up, and we have an easy game, we seem to fuck that one up a lot. And we did it again. And the question now is Potch going to be able to say to everybody, let's get back up and push? Yes. Or is there too much kind of infighting right now to kind of, is the unsettlement? I mean, he certainly doesn't seem to be helping his case.
Yeah, we actually have a question on Twitter from, I'm going to try this. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. Bulent Kazali. Clearly, we're all upset. There is an unbalance in the squad. Can Potch fix it? So he's asking the same question you just asked us. And I don't know. We haven't seen him really have to deal with this kind
He did say this is the most squad discontent.
Unsettled squad is the word he used. And I've seen a lot of people saying that maybe he doesn't get the meaning of unsettled and the way that he's used it.
Of course he does.
Yeah, that's...
He didn't do a press conference in English for years after he moved here. He's very careful about it. Of course he understands.
Yeah, that's... clearly we are unsettled. And I think it's... Like I said, I think it's really affecting his decisions because he doesn't know who he's going to have to rely on after September 2nd or whenever the window closes in the rest of the world. And that's causing these problems because he just doesn't know. And we know Potch gets his people and he sticks with them, and he doesn't know who he can stick with. So I think it's fucking with his head.
Well, I think that's exactly it, Kevin. He's playing the players and sticking with the players. I mean, some of it's injuries, but he's picking the players that he thinks are squad players, the people that he trusts that are truly Tottenham at this point. Like the Winks and Sissoko combo, and I know if Rick were on the podcast, he would be ready to rip them a new one, and I am too. Like their performance together was horrible in the midfield. But I think Potch is picking them simply by the fact that they are both, at this point, kind of Tutton through and through squad guys that he trusts, that they know that they're going to – that he's with them. And he doesn't know that Eriksson's with him. He doesn't know, apparently, whatever's going on with Vertonghen, whether Vertonghen's with him. And he's not picking the best players for the job anymore. He's picking the players that he trusts or values as being with the squad at this point. And that's not always the best solution for a game like this, I think.
Does anyone actually have a fucking clue what's happening with Vertonghen?
No.
He's got a black eye all of a sudden.
I saw that.
A rumor was apparently him and Kane had a fight.
That's a fake Tottenham Hotspur
ITK
account on Twitter.
I was going to get that, but thank you.
Because you said it was a rumor when it was just a dude having a joke.
It could be a rumor. Let's start the rumor.
He's going to be fighting.
I don't know. We've already spoken about Sanchez. He was appalling this weekend. I do think there's a player in there somewhere, but he's obviously not as good as Jan. No one would argue that. Mm-hmm. So, what the fuck? Is it a contract dispute? Because Jan's not out of contract next summer.
He is.
He is as well as Toby?
Yeah.
Yeah, Pochettino and Toby really fucked this up.
They all signed their five-year extension at the same or their new five-year deal
or
at the same summer.
Yeah,
I think we have another Foyth and Sanchez. Jan. Starting next year at the moment.
Well, that's what people believe.
And
why
Tangala
he's playing
on the bench. Yeah.
I think, you mentioned Sissoko and Winks. That can't be our midfield pairing ever.
It can.
Of course it can.
Not in a game like this, though. Because the best things about, look at how Winks played in the Champions League final. And his retention and his pushing forward there. When there's space and he can get it to the guys in front of them and they can go, that's when he's good. When Sissoko has space in front of him, the maraud forward, and when he can able to get guys and take the ball on the break and push the ball forward, that's when he's good. And we've seen them both be good in those situations. But when it has to be somebody finding a key pass through two lines of four, none of them have that in their locker room.
Needed to be in Ndombele.
We don't have him. But you can put Eriksson back there, too.
It should have been Eriksson and Lamella. Lamella, I was fine with being on, but I wanted Eriksson on as well. I think you need a couple guys
that can do that. And that's where I come down on Poch for this game, because the tactics, and we've gone back to the well a lot on these wingers, but what are you doing? And we can talk about Lucas all day and all night. Every game he puts out a good performance, everyone clamors from the start, and then every time that game comes along where he starts – he does nothing. And yesterday, he missed two really good chances.
And also, on the other side of that, every time Kane doesn't put in a good performance, everyone that's not a Spurs fan, at least, clamors on him about how overrated he is and stuff. But the Champions League final is a massive example of that.
Yeah.
Just drop Lucas, who scored a hat-trick. You're like, no.
But you know what? He missed the sitter, too. And you think about that. Look at what happened when Walker Peters came out and Sissoko went up for that right. Sissoko put in two balls that probably should have been at least gave Dubravka a bit of trouble.
Yeah.
And I hope that's not our solution going forward, and I pray to God that's not what happens. But I just wanted to point that out, that Sissoko was more decisive down the right than Walker Peters was in that game. And that scares the shit out of me.
Well, Sissoko is definitely a better footballer than Walker Peters.
At the moment. Which also scares the shit out of me. So I really hope that's not our solution going forward. But if Walker Peters, because he went off with an injury... We've got a real problem right back.
I'd actually like to talk about Walker Peters because, years ago, and as he was growing up, he was always the right back in the England system through every youth year. And he's been overtaken by Wan-Bissaka, obviously, and TAA at Liverpool, who's a few years younger, but he got that good. But he regressed massively, and I really hope that he can get it back. Every Spurs fan wants him to be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the more I see him play, the more I don't see him as an elite right back.
But is it because he's not getting enough game time from the past few seasons? That's my justification.
Maybe. That's the question.
I feel like if he wasn't getting used the past two seasons, at least get him some seasoning if he was going to be the guy for the future.
But why is he not getting used? Because, Poch has used, Oliver Skip a fair amount. Poch obviously didn't
he
really...
He played Foyth in that position.
Yeah, Poch didn't really rate Trippier because we just sold him. So, why was he not getting used?
I think Foyth I wouldn't use against him because even the Argentina managers come out and said he's putting Foyth at right back further. So that's... I think that's – Foyth was a young guy who really didn't know exactly where he fit.
What position he fit into.
And I think it's going to be right back now, which begs another question about who the fuck are we going to have in center defense next year. But so I wouldn't throw the Foyth thing at him. But at the same time, what are you talking about with Pochettino? He keeps these guys in training for years and years and years, doesn't send them out on loan, and then they're stale when we need them. I mean, again, on Pochettino, when it's all working and when we have this collection and the project, quote unquote, and it's all going great, and we love him, and I still love Pochettino, but right now, I'm about as low on him as I've ever been.
He's the anti-Chelsea. Chelsea send everyone out on loan, including like 29-year-old veterans, and like we send no one out on loan. Although Rolls just went out on loan, and
but I'm looking at this not as a one-off game situation. I'm looking at this as the end of last year.
The end of last year is different. I'm sorry, I'm going to disagree with this.
You disagree with this? Okay.
Yes, because the end of last year is very different. Everyone was fucking injured. So, yes, we fucking were terrible the second half of last season, or the last at least third, but everyone was injured.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
There was a reason why we were having to play, like, we were having to start Oliver Skip as an 18-year-old in a couple of games. And like,
but that's the thing. You'd hope we're no longer injured. We'd kind of get back to where to be a little bit better.
Every season we start slowly in August, and I am.
So you think this is more of a one-off?
I'm hoping that this is the same as every of the last five seasons, where we've been really bad in August, and then we start to get good in September, and then we're really good by November. Like, maybe I'm being optimistic there, but I'm really hoping that's what it is.
And I'll admit I'm somewhat shocked, only because you've been a lifelong Spurs fan. I would have assumed you would have been a little bit more pessimistic, but...
Yeah, I'm drunk, though, so...
I like your hopefulness, though. I mean, because this isn't the end of the world. It's still early. Like, there's still plenty of time to right the ship here. But I think we're all seeing a lot of problems that have to be fixed somehow, and these feel like bigger holes than they used to be. It isn't like we have the part and we're just waiting for a player to get on form or get back from injury. It seems like we don't have the right back right now. It seems like we're going to lose Eriksen, and we haven't replaced him. This is all coming at us, and it seems like maybe we've missed our opportunity. Have we?
Maybe. I mean, the thing I want to say, kind of, we really don't know. But that's the thing. Like, in the past, I would think, oh, we'll be able to bounce back from this. And instead of saying that, I'm saying, I don't know.
I mean, that's to say we – I mean, Dele's hurt. Foyth's hurt. We – and Ndombele was hurt for the last game. Like, we are dealing with some – I think Dele is the biggest injury out of all of them, especially because we're not using Eriksen. Like, right. That injury has caused us. If Dele starts the first three games, you think, like, if Dele starts fucking Sunday, yesterday, we don't lose that game.
Especially he's not starting the first three games. We're not using Eriksen, and two of them were Villa and Newcastle. We're going to sit back, and Dele is exactly the sort of player who you need in there. Like, not only can he play up front and make runs and stuff, but he has a final ball.
I think the absolute key you mentioned there is the movement.
In terms of marking,
he's a serious threat as
right.
well.
Like, you have to send somebody on every run that he makes, which opens up the space. Nobody was making runs.
I am one of the biggest defenders of Harry Kane when he has a quote-unquote bad game, because he doesn't touch the ball much.
But usually,
when he doesn't touch the ball much, he's making runs and people are just missing him or seeing it. On Sunday, to be fair to him, I haven't rewatched the game or extended highlights or anything because I was too annoyed.
Yeah.
But like, when I was watching it, he was just static.
His back was to the goal. Like, that was like he just
standing
there.
He just wasn't doing
it. And
then
the one chance he did, he fluffed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he should have made more of the penalty shout that VAR did.
Oh, my God.
That's why I was just going to bring up, we've managed to get through this whole conversation, and we haven't talked about the penalty.
Let's be fair, there was a lot of storylines for this previous match.
But still, this penalty was something we probably need to at least
which one, Son or Kane?
Well, Kane is the one that's really bad.
It was
there
a penalty.
Was a Son one?
One.
Well, there was, well, it wasn't called by VAR, but it was questionable. I wouldn't have called it, but there was a dubious tackle in the box, which caused some uproar at the bar.
Yeah, but the one on Kane, to go to VAR and then say it's not a penalty, like, what the fuck is a penalty then? Because the guy literally tackled him with his head and took him out.
And I saw,
and some pundit was like, oh, well, he leaned into it. Well,
Alan Smith, who's a gooner.
And no shit, he's leaning into it. The goal is the direction
or
he's
leaning. Or Alan Shearer, like, who's a Newcastle fan, so like, biased regardless.
But and I don't want to harp on about it because, like, did we deserve to win the game? No, but, like, if you're going to have VAR, you have... and not call that, that's fucking insane.
I was watching match, and they had the highlights, and how Nate was saying Shearer didn't believe it was a penalty, but Crouch did. So at least it's on our side. But looking at the replay, it was somewhat of a ground level shot. You can see Lascelles, is that how you say his name?
Yeah.
You can see him actually push off of his feet and go for the dive head first. So I'm like, if that doesn't scream intent, I don't know what, or I'm like, how Sam was saying, like, what is more for grounds of trying to impede a player, you know?
So my point is, like, my question is more about how is VAR being used? Because, like, none of us here understand the exact guidelines by which they're doing it. If you look at that video footage without knowing what the referee called and what, and whether or not there's VAR, that's a fucking penalty.
Yeah.
It is a penalty. I'm sorry. It's just a penalty. But, like, my point is that, like, the ref saw it, didn't call it a penalty. So then the VAR ref looks at it and thinks, oh, well, the ref didn't call it a penalty. And he obviously saw it because they're talking about it. So therefore, am I allowed to overrule? Is there a clear and obvious error? Now, in my mind, there is a clear and obvious error because he declared it not a penalty and it's a penalty. But what's the definition of clear and obvious? That's the thing that the fans need to be made known of. Like, what is VAR allowed to do and what it's not?
Because, and they have to find a way to identify in the game what the call was. Like, why it was this was deemed as not a penalty or was the rationale. It doesn't need to be they don't need to give you the detail of the fine points of why it was, but there needs to be a rationale of, like, overturned because of this.
Like in the NFL or NHL. Yeah. Like,
well, even in the NFL, though, if you think about it, go Kevin.
Sorry, Kevin.
For fuck's sake, Kevin. Boys. I got two things to say now. First one, supposedly in like 2 years, we're going to have full mics on all the refs and we're going to be able to hear everything they say on TV. That's like the rumor.
I was wondering what he was saying.
They just want to like work out the kinks before they're letting everybody in the world listen to them work out the kinks.
That's fair.
And
they
want
to stop being massive racists. That's what
I can see my
kids. And then, fuck you motherfuckers, I've forgotten my second point at this
NFL
point. It was
NHL?
About the penalty. Oh, I've said this before on the podcast. The problem with VAR right now is the rules are so gray. They need to be black and white. Like, if you read the rule on what a penalty is, it's basically the referee decides whether it's a penalty. Like, it's up to the ref. That is, like, the wording of the ruling if you read it.
And
like,
yeah.
There is nothing in the rule that, like, gives anything that, like, tells you what is a penalty. It's basically the ref's discretion. And if you have a ref on the field, like Sam said, saying, that's not a penalty, why is the guy in the box going to tell him it's not?
And it's like, the exact opposite of why people, and this is why the VAR nonsense is going to go on forever, because it's the exact opposite of why people were mad about the City goal. Because the City goal, they have a clear rule about what is and isn't a handball, right?
Right.
Now, people may think that rule is unfair, but it's a clear rule, right? And I think that was really important for them figuring that out. And I'm going on to this because it wasn't on the pod last week. But you can say whether it's fair or not, but at least they have an idea of what handball is now. Where before that, we had nothing. No, it could be. It was the same thing. So what are we going to do now for what a penalty is? Because they have to try to figure out the same thing, and it's going to still piss people off, but that's where they need to really go.
If you can show me a rule that says this is a penalty, then I'll accept it, even if I think it's bullshit. If that's the rule, then that's the fucking rule.
That's the funny thing. Like they clearly, when VAR came in, realized the ambiguity of the handball rule, and they tried to fix it. And then what they did was fix the ambiguity of it, and then everyone went, well, this is fucking bullshit. there's always going to be arguments. That's the nature of something like this. It's the nature of a sport like this. But like, they really do need to at least help the crowds and the fans understand what is and what isn't covered by VAR and how it is or it isn't covered.
There were
that's a fucking penalty.
And there were multiple things Sunday. I was like, are they going to review this? And then they never did. And we're like, why is this not being reviewed? Like, I don't understand. Like,
or it's it's like, what's grounds for review? It's not like the NFL or college football where it's like, you can throw a flag. You know, or it's like
a challenge. Yeah, there's no challenge.
You know, it's like with this, it's like for us, I mean, we're more or less, we're armchair quarterbacks, so to speak. So we're kind of like, oh, call that because that's a fucking foul. But is that grounds for it or not? You know, but okay. So enough bitching. Well, not really, but we'll
keep there's bitching. Never enough bitching about that one.
But let's move forward to MVP, LVP. So let's do MVP. Let's keep it a few sentences. Who wants to go first? Kevin, let's do it.
No one. I'm literally...
For which one?
For
MVP. Yeah. Just name a player.
For MVP, I'm not going to name one because nobody did anything positive. LVP, I got to go Sanchez just for the marking on the goal. You could probably say anybody on the field, though. I don't think there's anybody who did anything well.
Fair enough.
I'll go if I'm gonna do both. LaMelo wasn't horrible; he just wasn't enough.
So he was the.
I literally don't even remember him being on the pitch.
Yeah,
he was probably a good.
Yeah,
thing
it's a good thing. Yeah,
for this game. Yeah,
in my opinion, he was working hard, but there was nothing to show.
There was
for
no
it.
Outlets. There is nothing you could get out of it. But I'm really clutching at straws to give if I'm going to give him MVP. But I don't have anything good to say about anybody else. LVP, I'm going to go Harry Winks. I just like his passing was slow. He didn't seem like he had any answer. It was this AVB ball where we're passing the ball around the back and circling around and nobody has any ideas and you're hoping for like a long shot or zinger like Nate said, and it doesn't appear. And like if Winks had been off the pitch, I think we could have been more successful like with somebody else out there. So I have to give him LVP.
Fair enough.
Sam? MVP, I'm going to have to pick someone. I think I'm actually going to know Toby because he was dealing with Sanchez, who was awful and way out of position. And Toby covered a couple of times. And Toby's Toby. Like, he's always in position.
He's always solid, yeah.
So I'm going to go with him, even though I don't think anyone really covered themselves in the glory. LVP, there's a few options. I'm going to go with... I was going to go with Poch, but I think I'm actually going to go with Carl Walker-Peters, who was... continually caught in possession and then also continually caught out of possession. Like, it could also be Kane. No, I'm going
could
Cole.
Be just about anybody.
Yeah,
but I just you made me remember this moment though, with Kyle Walker-Peters, where we had the ball and it was either Sissoko or somebody that had on the right side, and there were like two or three Newcastle players right there, and Kyle Walker-Peters was right next to him. And he's just there, like, trying to figure out where he should put the ball with. And instead of doing anything to try to give him more space or give him another option, Kyle Walker-Peters just sat there. He didn't move at all.
He sat there and then tried to turn and then got caught in possession.
Right, yeah. He did absolutely nothing. He just stood there like a deer in headlights. And that's where I was thinking, like, does this guy know what he's doing? Does he even know what his job is?
Like,
and who's that on? Is that him? Is that Poch? But someone's got to figure it out.
All of us want... Well, not all of us, but most of us want Kyle Walker-Peters to be great. He's a Spurs product and stuff. Mm-hmm. And probably, therefore, most of us think a little bit higher of him about compared to his talent level. But, like, he's not been good the last couple of games. Like, we need a proper right
back. I thought
he was
actually fine against City. But it was a whole different kind of game. It's a game where he has no pressure on him because he's playing against Sterling.
He said that was the toughest game he's ever played in his life.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do my MVP and LVP real quick. My MVP is Steve Bruce. Fuck's sake, I got to give it to him. But fuck the... whatever we said, I will still say that the Newcastle setup was the most... Of all the teams that have been able to do that to us, it was the most organized I've ever seen. Like, it feels like they were people
after they scored.
Yeah, but even before that, like, I would see these banks, they'd like move in unison.
Yeah.
I felt like the lines were moving in unison. It was like weird. It looked German. Like, it was like that organized. I was like, how the fuck has this guy come in with like a couple of weeks? Everybody hates him. And he's got them playing like that. Respect. Respect Steve Bruce. Never thought I'd say that in my fucking life.
Stefan Brutz.
Yeah, if they get, they might get relegated, but they fucking, they earned that win. That they earned that fucking win. LVP for me, Lucas Moura. He had probably the two best chances, aside from the Kane one, to make his score. He had the one at the end of the first half, probably should have put it away. The other one where he just totally skied it. Player like him, the kind of hype we've been giving him, that needs to be in the back of the net. One of those two. Also, the fact that before the game, I don't know if you guys heard that, but he came out with a quote saying, like, I think I deserve to start, but I respect Poch's decision.
Yeah.
And then he gets a start, and he's fucking useless. So Lucas Moura is my LVP.
All right, to wrap up the first half.
About yours?
That's what I was getting to.
I just wanted to make sure. Sorry, Tommy. I just wanted to include you.
For those of you listening at home, there's quite a lot of aggressive looking going on right now.
Tommy has a death stare right
now. Anyways, MVP, I have Toby as well because he had to pick up the slack and whatever he had to do, he did do.
Yeah,
even though, unfortunately, as a whole, the team was just a shit show.
Yeah.
LVP, Sanchez as well. That was just terrible marking. Even with the build up, there was nobody was pressing, and with that, that was just a Sunday on top of that shit Sunday. So that's gonna wrap up the first half. Next up will be my segment, and after that, we're gonna preview the North London Derby. And also, we're going to have some questions, and we'll close out the podcast. But next up, myself. Tommy! Hi, everyone. I'm Tommy, and this is your back page update. Rumors are swirling from many sources that midfielder Victor Wanyama will sign for Club Brugge. The rumored deal is for £10 million and £65,000 a week. As of now, the reason for the transfer not going through is Victor Wanyama is waiting on the result of the second leg of Club Brugge's second leg Champions League qualifier to see if they make the group stage. Well, it'll be sad to see him go, but unfortunately it all makes sense. Since we purchased Victor Wanyama for £11 million, this would be a good deal. The bigger issue for Spurs is if he does leave, this will create a leaner squad, which means depth will be lacking again. According to a report in The Atlantic, Bank of America provided Spurs with loans up to £637 million for stadium construction and development, and they agreed to work with the club to refinance £400 million of that debt. This means that the club will be able to repay the loans longer into the future. Spurs are also raising the money via bond issue. What does this mean? The loan was originally due in 2022. Having the bond issue means the loan repayment will stretch out to 15 to 30 years. This means that the club's budget will increase and revenue created can be reinvested instead of paying off the debt. According to the Tottenham Supporters Trust, Tottenham Hotspur will not offer Champions League multi-game ticket packages at a discount for this season. Previously, the club gave season ticket holders a discount for all three group home games for the previous two seasons, which led to impressive attendance numbers at Wembley Stadium. The alleged reason for this is for the inconvenience of going to Wembley Stadium. Part of me is shocked and not so shocked. I mean, soccer tickets have increased all over in England, and the increases are pricing out regular fans. It's a shame. I mean, it's not like Spurs couldn't afford to give the season ticket holders a small discount for loyalty. I mean, after all, isn't it the fans that help make the club and sport what it is today? I'm Tommy, and this is your Backpage Update. All right, thank you to myself for the Backpage Update.
Thanks, Tommy.
You're welcome.
You're great.
One thing I didn't mention in my Backpage Update was a rumor that kind of sprung up today about we might actually be back in for Fernando Llorente because he is a free agent. For those who don't know, or like I said, probably going to sell Victor Wanyama, but also George, Kevin, and Kudu's gone. So with this means an international spot would open up in theory. But what are you guys' thoughts about this potential signing?
I mean, that was the one concern I would have, was whether it would mean we'd have to go in with less people in the Champions League. But if that's not a problem, then there's no downside for me. Clearly, he doesn't rate Parrott enough to put him on the bench for a game against Newcastle because he wasn't there.
Well, he did play that Friday for the under-23s.
No, he didn't. Yeah,
but, oh, he didn't?
No.
Oh. Well, even if he did, why would you have him play in that?
Right.
You know, that's...
Oh, yeah.
Well, he did have that injury, so maybe it was that. But regardless, maybe the injury in the City game the week before. But, yeah, if it's not going to mess up our international situation for Champions League, then I don't see a downside. I think he did a good job when we needed him to last year. We know his limitations, but we know what he can bring, and I'm for it.
The only thing against him is the amount of money he was getting paid. Like, he was on $100,000 a week.
Oh, yeah.
Well, apparently, the rumor is that he wants $90,000 a week.
Still and a fuck ton thing.
But, like, also, like, he's also a different player to Parrott, from what I understand of the 14 minutes of highlights I've ever watched Parrott play. But the other thing I wanted to say on this is we do need a second striker of some sort. And rumors broke today that we're looking at Ashley Barnes in January, who, if we're going to get Llorente, I don't think we should go for Ashley Barnes. If we don't get Llorente back, then I think we should.
I would love Ashley Barnes.
He's great. Yeah, like
4 goals in 3 games already this year.
He rifles opposition players up about as much as Dele does.
Yeah.
Great in your team.
Either way, like Barnes in the future, Llorente right now, I think we need that backup striker, and I think we need Parrott too. Like, I think good teams have multiple striker options, and Parrott's probably down the road anyway, but I like what I'm seeing out of him, and I don't want to stifle his opportunity, certainly. But I don't think Llorente does that. Like, you're going to use him in those types of games. Like, the Champions League games, like, where you're playing a slow Italian side that, like, yes, he's going to be perfect for. Like, his durability in the air or whatever he seems to accomplish there. It's like you don't see much on the pitch, but then all of a sudden he gets that header in the goal or whatever he does, a lucky ball off his foot that just happens to bounce into the back of the net. It's worth having a guy like Llorente. It doesn't seem like there's a downside. Still give Parrott some playing time. I don't want to see him get stifled, but the more the merrier is.
His hip, definitely not his arm.
Not his hand.
No. Definitely not his arm.
It was just his hip.
Yep, agreed.
Just his hip.
Okay, so I guess I'll wrap up our intro, but now here's going to be the tough part. We're going to preview the North London Derby next Sunday.
Derby!
What did I say?
Derby.
Yeah, whatever.
I mean, we're American, though. Is it weird? Yeah, I was talking to you, Sam.
But that's what that's
it's
how it's pronounced.
Lose for me, though. If I say Derby, you're like, you're a fucking Anglophile poser. But if I say it like Derby,
you're a massive soccer fan from America, you should fucking own that shit, because you people wear scarves in 100 degree weather.
I don't do that.
I don't do that either.
But I know you're talking about it. Weird as
they
shit.
Have these. They have those
MLS fans do it too.
Yeah.
It's weird as fucking shit that they do. I was in Portland last week. That's why I wasn't on the podcast. And they do this thing where at the beginning of the national anthem, they all toss their scarves like in the air for a little bit, like at every break in the national anthem. And it's a really cool thing, but I'm thinking, like, it's like 75 outside. What the fuck are you doing with a scarf on?
And you paid at least $20 for a scarf. I'm like, why would you? Or do you keep it in your hand?
Why do you keep it in
your
hand?
You guys have to admit that even at Chicago Spurs, and I fucking love you guys for this.
Oh, people do.
You make up, no, not just the scarves thing. You guys chant like English people, and you make up your own chants. And Nathan, you are king of this. So you can't pretend that there isn't like a little bit of nonsense.
I feel like that because that's coming from actual songs of the team, right? And I make up my own in the style of that because it's an English team. But I'm not English, so I feel like using all the... You know what? You're right that it's weird. The whole thing's fucking weird. Why am I even doing this?
I love it.
Why
don't get me wrong. I fucking love it here, but like, it is like you do nod towards the English.
Yeah, that's true.
In conclusion, the whole system's fucked up.
Yeah.
Surprise, surprise. A bunch of fans of English soccer.
A bunch of Anglophiles.
Yeah. Well, I was an Anglophile.
Why do you even hang out with us, Sam? I mean,
you're a Swedophile. We're not deal with that.
Well, I mean, do I like lingonberry jam? I mean, why not? The Swedish pancakes? I mean... Who doesn't love it? They're delicious. Lutefisk? Yeah, I don't know. I haven't tried it yet. Swedish meatballs, maybe.
What's interesting is that you're still trying to get it.
Are we going to talk about fucking Arsenal?
I'm just saying the inevitable. Well, former Swedish right winger Freddie Ljungberg played for them.
Exactly.
We're off fire as well.
No. I'll tie this back in. His wife is actually a Spurs fan.
Really?
Yep. Don't ask how I know. I just read. But we're playing a Dido's team on Sunday. For those who don't know, we're playing at 10:30 in the morning on Sunday. Game will be on NBC Sports Network, or if you don't have cable, you can watch on Telemundo. If not, or if you're in the UK, you can watch on Sky Sports Main Event. But Anthony, you want to take it away with the preview?
Yeah, I can do this preview as much as I hate to do it for the scum. But okay, so Arsenal currently sits third place in the league with 6 points. That's 2 wins, 0 draws, and 1 loss to Liverpool. Their form is a loss to Liverpool this past week and a win to Burnley and a win to Newcastle prior to that.
Fuckers.
That's a familiar team. Their most recent game was that 3-1 loss to against Arsenal. Upcoming on Sunday, following the game on the 15th after the international break, they take on Watford. Their top goal scorer at this point is Aubameyang with 2. Their top assist man is Daniel Ceballos. Ceballos is how it's pronounced, with 2. And their top rated player is Ainsley Maitland-Niles with 7.06. I can handle Maitland-Niles.
All right, I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, but thank you, Nate. I appreciate the support. the last 5 times we faced them, we drew last time, and that was at home. They beat us. We won in the League Cup, and then they beat us in the Premier League prior to that, then a win and a loss prior to that. So it's been kind of this alternating back and forth, but we never seem to really do well when we're at the Emirates.
Except in the League Cup last time we played?
I don't really count that, though.
I do. I took a day off for that game. It's perfect.
The fact that we drew at home to them as well, remember that Lloris saved a penalty? Yeah. Like, and they were good that day, and we weren't great. So no. Anyway.
No, but thanks, Anthony, for that. So this is going to be a broad question. It was, when we were prepping for the show, we saw that our good friend Jonah had a question, but we couldn't find it. But I do remember, or at least we talked about, his question was, how are we going to play? Who is going to play? And I guess the real question is, after yesterday's hot mess, what do Spurs need to do to succeed? Because Arsenal have brought in some players. They brought in Sideshow Bob. They got Ceballos in on loan. So, what are the keys to the game?
They have 2 Sideshow Bobs.
Yeah.
Now they do.
Wait, who's the other one?
Guendouzi.
Yeah.
That is true. But who wants to go?
I fucking hate that guy, by the way. He's really good at pissing me off. Everything he does makes me angry. Guendouzi.
What can we do to stifle him, then?
I don't know. Cut his hair like Samson.
You know, I actually brought up that reference.
I hope they should take like what the Yankees did when they didn't allow like facial hair and like made Johnny Damon cut all his shit off, and then he was gone.
Or Don Mattingly, same with Mr.
Jason Giambi,
or Mr. Burns making Don Mattingly shave off his sideburns too. What a piece of shit!
What a dickhead Mr. Burns is.
I know.
I feel like yesterday's game really has no factor into this one at all. First of all, it's a derby, so form's thrown out the window. But second of all, like, the way the game's going to go is nothing. Arsenal's not going to park the bus at home.
They can't.
So all the issues with our wingers and our midfield are going to not be there. So it's kind of going to be interesting. What the question then is Poch going to get over this fucking bullshit and play our best guys? Or is he still going to have these fucking hang-ups with players? And is it going to cost us again? That's the main question out of this I have.
Yeah, if they've got Lacazette and Aubameyang playing up front and Pepe.
Yeah,
it's just like, nothing but speed.
Do we like? I know that Sanchez is faster than Jan, but Jan is better. Do we really want to deal with Sanchez dealing with that?
Positioning overrules speed any day of the week.
Yeah, I agree, but
at the same time, do you want a cold Jan Vertonghen's first Premier League game against this Arsenal attack?
Yeah.
I mean, where's your catch 22?
I trust him.
I do too. Clearly, Poch doesn't. So, what the fuck's going on? But
Fuck is Poch anyway?
Yeah. Who does he think he is?
To get back to Jonah's question, Dele is supposed to be training with the squad, right?
Yeah, he said today that he's probably going to play.
He has to play.
I think so.
What I would like to see is probably a I think a 4-3-3 with Sun, Kane, and probably Lamella, and then in the three, and Ndombele if he's fit, which I think he's supposed to be, Eriksen and Dele.
No, there's no way.
That midfield's going to get lost.
Yeah, we get destroyed.
In what midfield does Arsenal have?
Well, but like with that, that midfield has five attacking midfielders.
Yeah,
we're not playing five attacking midfielders at the fucking Emirates. This is a perfect game for Sissoko. I'm sorry, guys. I know that sounds stupid coming from me, but think about the space he's going to have to fucking do his fucking thing and the amount of shit he's going to piss Arsenal fans off of and their midfielders by getting stuck in and then pushing the ball forward into space that we're no doubt going to have. I think this game is – the really big question is Ndombele going to be back or not? A lot of people – it's a minor thigh injury, quote-unquote. For Spurs fans, that could mean no games till December, to be honest. I mean, we don't fucking know.
Or it could mean a sort of secretive cocaine habit, yes. And he's out for 11 months.
Exactly.
So, wait, who had that?
Well, Alan Hutton years ago.
Oh, yeah,
and Lamella as well, allegedly.
Apparently Andy Carroll had that too, allegedly. But Anthony, what do you got?
That makes me...
Well, what I think we have is we have this conundrum. Like, are we going to play the best squad to play against Arsenal, or are we going to play the squad that Poch thinks is the people can rely on the most? Because the people he thinks he can rely on the most don't seem to be the people that we can, as a supporter base, rely on to pull through on a win. This one is nerve-wracking for me. I know it has nothing to do with what happened at Newcastle, and we can certainly bounce back and be that team again. But I'm worried because of the infection that we saw, like, in the squad. Like, it's just not working right. I don't think we've seen that since the first season of Pochettino at this point. This is something new, so I'm a little fearful about this one. Like, at the Emirates, like, we don't even know who he's going to put out there. Yeah, if Ndombele's out there, like, I'm feeling better. Like, Ndombele, Sissoko, I'm probably okay. But Dele Alli starting after not playing any games yet, like, just in training, just coming and starting off the bench, I don't think so. Like,
that's
how it goes, though. I could see him getting subbed on, maybe, but, like, it's...
No, I totally disagree. You need to start Dele if he's fit.
And here's my question, actually. Eric Dier had some minutes, but, I mean, is he 100%? Because I hate to say it, I'm like... And I've been down on him recently, but I'm like, I think we might need to play him if Ndombele is not 100%.
Maybe.
We talked about this last week, actually.
Okay.
You weren't on the podcast, but we've been a little bit down on Dier. And I think it was mostly just like this health and fitness issue that happened. Like, we haven't seen the best out of him. And I think as a fan base, but there's something that he provides when he's paired up when he's paired up with Dembele, it was huge. And if we can get him paired up with Ndombele, I think we can get something good.
He's very high energy.
The last time we saw Eric Dier start a game was the Bournemouth game. Do you guys remember how he looked in the Bournemouth game?
Not so hot.
He should have been sent off there. He was lucky. We should have been down to 9 men before the first half.
In fact, I seem to remember on the podcast, a couple of people voted him LVP over Juan Foyth, who was on the pitch for a minute and a half before he got sent off.
Exactly.
That's how
bad Eric Dier was. That's the last memory I have of him on the field. So to throw him in for the Arsenal game, remember, he was in the midfield when we got overrun by Arsenal last time we played them at home. He did score in that game and shushed the crowd, and I love him from that forever. But then we let 3 goals in, and we looked like garbage. So I don't know if I throw him in. I do think Dele can come right back in, though. And I would set it up with play Desk. Put them all on the field at the same time. Give me Son, Eriksen, Kane, Dele Alli.
So throw the
and Lamella and Lucas on the bench.
Yeah.
Throw the kitchen desk in.
Put Winks and Sissoko in there right now. And if Ndombele's fit, do Ndombele and Winks.
Like, that's the thing.
Or
like,
Ndombele and Sissoko. I don't care.
Arsenal were not strong at the back. And hilariously, they signed David Luiz, who appears to have made
them
weaker at the back.
Did anyone watch the Liverpool-Arsenal game?
Yeah. Of course.
The penalty. Salah's not even going to goal. And he's not even making the run towards the goal. He's making a run to the byline. And he's grabbing his fucking shirt, pulling him like
did
the
it
best
a,
thing.
He did it again, but Slaw was offside. It would have been another.
The best penalty. Thing is that he turns around and appeals to the referee as if he didn't do anything. You're like, there's VAR now. Like, that, you yeah. shouldn't even bother
then
doing that.
Then he started
that.
Smiling afterwards. Yeah. It's like, fucking weirdo. But yeah, no. Of all the. Arsenal's been talking about this home run transfer window. I hope these words don't come back to bite me because they might. So knock on wood. But they keep getting the same kind of guys. And they never fix the problem. And their problem is the defense. And that's what it's been. You can talk about Ainsley Maitland-Niles having this high rating.
He's good.
But he's also had some fucking awful games. And the League Cup game, we beat him, and he looked like shit that game. I thought we had his number that whole fucking game. And so I'm not really convinced at him yet. But they're also their center back pairings. Socrates, okay. David Luiz looked like shit against Liverpool. And then it's Monreal. And you guys are spending $70 million on Pepe when you've got Lacazette and Aubameyang already up there. And you got Mkhitaryan. You got all these guys.
Monreal.
You're like, I know what we need another fast fucking forward. That'll solve everything.
To be fair, Monreal can play other positions. He's not a bad footballer.
He's a Swiss Army knife. He's a dull Swiss Army knife.
Totally. Wait, is he like Eric Dier? Is that what you're trying
to
say?
No, he's worse.
I'm totally agree that, like, I could not believe it when they signed Pepe. I'm like, if you have that amount of money, sign a fucking Virgil van Dijk-esque guy. Absolutely bad decision from Emery, but, like, I'm fine with it.
And that's the thing is, and I look at their midfield, and if that the real question, the game's going to be won in the midfield. And it's, do we get a good Harry Winks? Do we get a Champions League final Harry Winks? Do we get a yesterday Harry Winks?
Or no Harry Winks.
Or no Harry Winks.
I think Sissoko
going to be up to it?
Winks.
I think Sissoko is going to be fucking shine in this
if
game.
If Ndombele's fit, I think they might start Ndombele and Sissoko together in the pivot and then Desk.
Yeah, now that I've come back to Earth, the Crispin's not talking as much anymore. I think if Ndombele's fit, it's got to be Ndombele and Sissoko with Desk up top. I just want to see Dele. That's the number one guy. That's going to be the name I'm looking for on the list. I think he can come straight in and make a huge, huge difference. And
he's the, like, I know that everyone slated him last season, but like he actually had a bunch of key passes and stuff. Maybe they weren't converted.
He was huge in the Ajax game. Yeah, people talk about Lucas Moura, but Dele Alli's second half in that game was just as good.
I hate to use this phrase, but his attacking football IQ is just so much higher than pretty much every one of our other footballers. Like, obviously Kane is up there and Eriksen and stuff, but like he's brilliant. Yeah. And every time any opposing fan tells me he's overrated, it just makes me laugh.
Yeah.
He has bad games, but fucking hell, he's so good.
You can understand why people see that, though.
I mean, because
they don't watch.
If you just look at the numbers, it looks like he has regressed each season. But if you actually watch him play,
if you look at the cumulative numbers, he basically matches Hazard on his in his whole career in the Premier League.
People don't look at the big picture. Like I said earlier, I think that's the biggest injury right now. And missing him has killed us.
Yeah, and I'd just like to say to any Chelsea fans listening, I don't necessarily think he's better than Hazard, if you thought that was what I meant.
But there is a good case for comparison.
Well, I mean, there's a good case to say that he's not as overrated as everyone thinks he is. Obviously, football is more than stats.
Yeah. Right. Here's my question. I think, generally speaking, we have the starting 11 sussed out. But right back. Kyle Walker-Peters came out with an apparent injury, so
Serge?
I want Serge to come on. I would love him to show his worth, because I still have hopes for him, but is it going to happen? I mean, what do you think, Kevin?
It's unfortunate that Lucas isn't on the podcast. We all know what he would say. And, I mean, I think it's got to be, right? There's nobody else.
Eric Dier.
No. Ugh. No chance.
So is Foyth injured as well?
Yeah.
Sissoko.
Foyth is injured.
Because here's my thought about the game.
Joe would say Sissoko.
If
100%.
If Arsenal were to win the game, it would probably be 4-2-4-3. Just because their defense is shit and they have a lot of offensive weapons. I think we might have to go fight fire with fire in theory. And then see how that goes. But Kevin?
Yeah, I know we're not like, I know this pains me to say, but it, like, we are not on Liverpool's level, obviously.
Lucas would argue with that.
They made Arsenal look awful besides like the last 7 minutes
when
where
they
were just done with the game. Unfortunately, they ended up giving up a goal. But like those, they just don't have, it's like we said, they didn't fix the problem. They just added the same kind of guys. Like they have these three ridiculously pacey forwards, but none of them can really do anything with each other. Like I don't, Pepe, like he didn't really impress me at all. He had some really nice footwork, but he didn't really do a whole lot.
Yeah.
He missed the one-on-one. Didn't, you know, I don't know.
I disagree because I like in the first half at least I thought he was very, very useful. Yeah, the footwork was good, but like he found a lot of space. He like he created space for his teammates as well. But I agree with you. They haven't fixed the problem. It does feel quite a lot like Kevin Keegan in the 90s. We're just like, if we score more goals than them, we'll win. And like playing like your mom at defense. Like it's like they like I cannot imagine that they are serious challengers this year. Yeah, they may finish top four, but the way they're set up, they're never going to challenge for the title.
Mm-mm. Okay. I don't know. Does anybody have anything else to say? Because if not, I say we dive into predictions.
I just think, like...
Okay.
Whatever happens this game, I don't think, unless we're blown out badly, unless it's by five or something like that, or we let five goals, and if it's another 5-2, like, for example... I don't think we can, again, look too much into this just because it's the North London Derby at the Emirates.
Yeah.
And it's going to...
The fourth game of the season.
It's the fourth game of the season. And then it's an international break, and we kind of figure out what's going on. So I just want to, like, I hope people don't... Like, if we lose this game, I will not freak out nearly as much as the loss of Newcastle.
And in addition to that, though, with the international break, which I think will actually be good for us, but our track record, like, during the September... international break has been it's been a mixed bag because I remember the last time we played Arsenal right before an international break, this was
2013
2014
season,
yeah, because ABB was still there. And it was just, I mean, we lost, so I'm like, I mean, I don't really have high hopes for this game, but like you said, we'll see. Anthony?
This seems like it's set up for us, this painful crap that always seems to happen around international breaks for us. Like, we had a really bad loss at Newcastle. Now we have to play Arsenal at the Emirates. It just feels wrong. I'm really worried about this. I feel like we are looking at a loss.
But, like, what's
here.
What's the end of the world, really? Like, we usually lose this game. Like, yeah. I hate losing to them, and it's going to bug me for a long time, because it always does. But this isn't a game we go in thinking we're going to win.
It's just the, usually, after the Newcastle loss. Like Rick said it last week, if like Newcastle was such an important win because we're going to the Emirates, and if we had gotten 7 points out of our first three games, then losing to Arsenal wouldn't be such a big deal. But the losing here is going to be a big deal.
I'm
going to
play devil's avocado with you for a moment.
Guacamole me up.
Of Satan. I feel like we've gone to this fixture a load of times where Arsenal have been absolutely reeling, and then we've played them thinking they're there for the taking, and they've beaten us. What if this time we're totally fucking out of sorts? They're still kind of high on their transfer and their buzz. Yeah, they did lost to Liverpool, but it's Liverpool away. They got a goal at the end. They look decent. They're kind of feeling up for it. We look like shit. We're there for the taking. What if it flips this time? And we win 2-0 or something. And we look fucking like world beaters and shit like that.
5-1.
So you never know. 5-1 at the Emirates. They fucking shell Emery with fucking bottles. He's got to get an escort to his car. Boom. Ouch.
Is that an official
the
prediction?
The cockle flies.
Do we just start predictions?
No. That's just me being counterpointing you. But yeah, no. Could happen. Could happen.
I would love to believe that. I don't know. I might be seen as a pessimist, but I like to be more realistic on based on the information at hand, at least. So
yeah, but there's no fun in that.
I know. I mean, I love the optimism, but, you know. But speaking of that, we got questions to come up, so let's do predictions right now. Score and scores. Who wants to go first? Sam,
I'm going to go first, and I'm never, ever, 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 ever going to predict us losing to Arsenal, and I'm never going to predict us drawing to Arsenal. So, heart above head, I'm going to go. We're going to win 3-2 in a ridiculous game where we get very lucky.
Kabul header, Fabregas handball.
Kabul doesn't play for us anymore, I don't think. I'm going to go 3-2 to us, and I'm going to go our scorers. I'm going to go Son, because I think that in this game, Arsenal aren't going to play like Newcastle. They're going to allow us to actually have a little bit of space. So I'm gonna, Son's going to have a bit of space, and I'm going to go Kane, and then I'm also going to go with a Danny Rose screamer just for the lads.
Just for the it's happened again, Jeff.
Nice. Who wants to go?
I'll go.
Sure.
I am going to predict a draw because my heart is telling me loss, and I don't want to think that.
Of course, yeah.
But I'll go 2-2 draw, and I agree with your goal scorers. Like, I'm going to go Kane and Son, I think, get goals for us in this game.
All right. I'll go next. I actually had a 2-2 draw as well, but I'm going to go with Kane and Ali. I know history doesn't mean anything, but in general, we either lost or tied at the Emirates, aside from last year's League Cup and 2010. So let's be a little more optimistic and have them lose only 2 points. So
I'm going to go with a 3-1 win. I think Socrates is going to get sent off due to the VAR decision.
That's very niche.
Well, if it pays off, you guys will be like putting crucifixes in my face and shit.
Yeah, we're buying rounds of drinks for Nate if that happens.
I'll get asking me for lottery numbers. But no, I think Vara's going to give us a little pick-me-up. I'm going to go with Sonny with 2 and Lucas with 1 late. I think they have one early to take the lead. Socrates does something stupid when we're on the break. And we're going to come out winners, and all this fucking bad juju is going to be forgotten, and we're going to remember that day for the rest of our lives.
And then we're going to win the league.
Definitely.
But we can still attain Lucas's prediction of that quadruple. Kevin, what do you have?
I'm going to say 3-2. I think somebody else said that. Harry with 2, and Delhi's going to get 1.
Okay, that's going to wrap up our preview of Arsenal, aka the North London Derby. But now we actually have 3 social media questions. Kevin, let's just do dealer's choice. So choose which one you want to do first. So we have one about the stadium atmosphere. Miles has a question about Jose Mourinho and a point gap. So choose your poison.
I'm going to leave the Mourinho one for last.
Let's do it.
So we'll go to, I don't know if this is like a word, so I'm just going to spell it K-C-I-T-T-I. I don't know if that's like
K-C-I-T-T-I.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of confused. I don't know. So they say, can we all stop referring to the new stadium as an advantage? Sure. Being at home is always an advantage, but is the new NFL style stadium really a pro for the atmosphere at the game?
Whoa.
Did we take the soul
I'm
out of
Sam take
lane?
This one. I'm going to let
not,
Sam take
not
this
an excuse for the loss, just a pet peeve of mine.
Do not call it an NFL-style stadium. It's not an NFL-style stadium. It's a fucking football-style stadium that happens to have NFL games that are going to happen there.
Goddamn
like,
right.
Like, the crowd are so much closer to the field and lower than they are in NFL stadiums. In fact, when the NFL games are at Wembley, or they were at, like, they have to put covers over the first few rows.
No, they don't.
They do at Wembley. I've been there.
No, at the new stadium, they don't. Because
he said Wembley.
Oh, I'm right, sorry.
No, I also did say the new stadium, but at Wembley they do, because those are so low that the team standing next to the sideline, as they do in an NFL game, block the view. Like, it's not an NFL stadium. That is a very loaded question, and I'm very annoyed.
I love it.
Anthony, what are your two cents?
No, I'm just thinking that, like, to call the stadium out at this point. Like, we knew that there was going to be a transition into the stadium, and we got to play a few games last season there.
We lost two of them.
And we did lose two of them.
Right.
There's going to be growing pains before we create a fortress out of it. Like, you're not going to have a fortress overnight to have these types of expectations. And I agree with you, Sam, like, to call it an NFL. They actually pull an artificial pitch. Too bad Rick's not on the episode, but they pull an artificial pitch over it.
No,
for
it's
the
under.
And, right. Under. I'm sorry. Under it for the...
We
for the NFL. It's nothing. There's no comparison
like,
there.
Criticize the stadium all you like, but like,
it's going to take some time.
Don't criticize it because they're like, oh, they designed it like it was an NFL stadium.
It's the fucking
like,
most it's the beautiful opposite. Stadium in the world. Everyone that goes there says it. So...
Yeah, and there's like
fuck you.
There's
no,
an actual like statistical data that shows every home stadium is an advantage. So I don't know. It's an advantage no matter what. Like,
yeah, don't call it an NFL.
In addition to that, based off of what Kevin said, but also just the atmosphere, because I remember Rick saying in terms of acoustics, they actually. I think they consulted with a sound engineer.
It was the U2.
Yeah,
guy.
For U2. So, like, all the sound reverberates. So, like, if you think about Denver's, I don't know what field it's called now, Sports Authority or Invesco, whatever.
It used to be Sports Authority. I don't know if it's still
but
it's probably Mile High.
Oh, yeah, good call. But, like, for example, like, at that stadium, they have the metal where the sound reverberates. Or, for example, CenturyLink Field at for the Seattle Seahawks and Sounders. It creates a massive sound. Or Texas A&M, they have the 12th man. 12th man is known as not an equalizer, but it has an advantage, so to speak. Whether it be college football in America or in Europe, like the number 12 is retired for that specific reason. So, but
yeah,
Sam,
to be fair, like a lot of the home field advantage comes from the noise of the crowd. Creating errors from the umpires and the referees. So, like, I'm hoping as, like, technology gets better, that won't be as much. Obviously, with American football, it's going to be the same because the louder you are, it makes it more difficult for the quarterback to shout quarterbacks. Yeah. But, like, shout orders. Orders? Plays.
Plays.
Close enough.
Yeah, close enough.
I like orders. I'm going to use that.
But yeah,
like I'll have a pass to the right now. Yeah. It's an order.
Out route. With a side of fries.
I wasn't thinking like that orders. I was thinking like marching orders. God damn.
All right, well, I'm done.
All right. Where are we going with this, really?
Nate, did you have any other thoughts?
No, let's move to the next
Kevin,
question.
Next question.
All right, this is one of my favorite questions we've ever gotten.
No, oh, wait. Yeah. Or is it the point gap?
What?
We have one about the point gap, I
what
thought.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Four games in. Who's talking about a point gap right now?
Well, this upcoming Twitter question, you'll find out.
Fucking Jesus.
Be nice. These are our listeners.
And I don't want to hear about you fucking Jesus.
God,
this is disgusting.
All right, let me talk. Jesus, this has gone terribly wrong at this point. Given that there were... it's from Pete H. on Twitter. Given that there were only two measly points separating us, Chelsea and Woolwich, at the end of last season, do you think our maddening inconsistency stretching from last year, tied to the obvious squad issues, means we inevitably take a step back this season and finish fifth or sixth, even though Man U and Chelsea have their own issue?
No.
Ooh. This is my fear. I mean, like, we certainly could spin that way. I mean, I think there's a certain amount of us that all want to be in Poch we trust. Like, he hasn't led us too far astray. Like, he has kept us at the top of the table. But I don't think we've seen the squad challenges that we've seen so far this season. And maybe it's because we are in this weird period between our transfer window closing and the international window still being open that it's created this vacuum of bullshit that's still going on while we're trying to play our football, and maybe that's what the problem is, and maybe we get past that and we'll see normal Poch again, and I hope that's the case, but I understand this fear here. I'm not sure if I'm ready to say that that's where we're going, but I definitely understand the sentiment of this question.
I think the difference is we have Poch, and they have Ole, and they have Frank Lampard. So I think that just gives us an advantage over them, because all three of us have looked pretty bad. I think Chelsea has probably looked the worst.
But Lampard gets a mulligan this year, though.
But yeah, which is ridiculous.
But that's like but they're included in this.
No, yeah, I get it.
It still affects their place in the table. I mean,
right. And yeah. So I think that's the big difference maker is we have Poch and he can fix things. I think Ole's going to be out by Christmas. Ollie, whatever the fuck his name is, and then
hire Poch.
And then Frank, he's going to get at least a full season and into next before they fire him. So
yeah, I totally agree. Like, we're going to finish ahead of Chelsea. Just like our squad is better. Like, yeah, sure. Like, there have been, like, Mason Mount looks great. He does look great.
He does
like,
look really good. Abraham looked really good against Norwich as well.
Yeah. I can't even disrespect his hair. It's good.
This is weird. Chelsea are losing all the players that are hateable.
For the listeners that don't know me, I'm very bald, so I love Tammy Abraham's hair. But I do think that we're just better than Chelsea and Man United. We just are. Like, I think we're going to finish ahead of them. I think we are very big favourites to finish ahead of Arsenal as well. I know we haven't looked good in the first three games, but I am still sticking to the story of the last 3-4 seasons where we haven't been good until October or so, rather than just looking at the last 9 months or so, because I think the end of last season is different from the start of new season.
I think this question, hearing it out, makes me even less worried than him getting worried about it because of what you guys have all said. I watched the whole Palace United game. They looked as toothless as we did, and it was like a brilliant goal from James that even got him on the board in the first place. And then they let Patrick Van Aanholt just take the ball all the way down. And he took it from Pogba as well. No one challenged him.
Oh, and it was a David De Gea error as well. The best keeper in the league. It was an error from him.
Everybody's off. They're off of him now. No one anymore.
The last good game he had was against us. Shocker. Yeah. He just reminded me that Chelsea has no Eden Hazard and have looked shaky at best in their first three games. And Man United have looked the same. So the only really – and I mean, even Arsenal, I mean, they had 2-1-goal wins against Newcastle and Burnley. And, yeah, we couldn't beat Newcastle, but, I mean, that game could have gone either way, to be honest. Even with how shit we were, we still had a chance to win that game. So, yeah, I mean, outside of Liverpool, Man City, that 3 and 4 are up for grabs, essentially, even no matter who it's going to be. Hell, what if Leicester just beats everybody to it? I could see a scenario where that happens.
Kevin, last question. With this, let's just do rapid fire.
Rapid fire? This is the best question we've ever had.
Okay, we'll keep it 3 minutes tops then.
So Miles McIntosh on Twitter.
Boy Detective.
Great name.
Miles McIntosh, Boy Detective.
If things get worse, is Jose Mourinho the favorite to replace Poch?
Yes.
Yeah. No, of course he's not.
Yes, he fucking
he
is.
He was
there. He was there. They're already talking about it behind his back.
Oh.
No.
That would be horrible. Like, we'd get a bunch of trophies, but then it would suck.
Oh, no,
suck
I'm fine with that. Hang on.
Time out.
Exactly. Think about this.
The first season of him being there, we would win everything.
Yeah, let that marinate a little bit.
If we lose Poch, that means we're already heading towards disaster. Yes, so why not get something out of it?
But no, because Mourinho is the sort of manager that needs someone to invest £400 million and then leave 2 years later with an aging squad and a massive wage bill. Levy is not going to fucking do that. There's no way.
That is true, but he did bring Porto to a Champions League
title. Yes, that was before he managed big team.
First stage Mourinho you're talking about. Then we have second stage Mourinho, which Sam just mentioned.
If
now we're talking about third stage Mourinho. Beyond midlife crisis.
He goes back. If Levy has a time machine that can take Mourinho back to 2004, yes, I would love him to be there.
I think Kevin wants to say something.
I'm not sure if he does.
I'm waving my hands like a crazy man. there's a video that recently came out of Mourinho talking about how much he misses football, and he literally is crying in it. Like, I want that man if Poch would leave. Yeah. But hell yeah, dude.
Do you know how and fucking... Bring that fucking shit show to me. Just bring it here. I want all of
and
it.
Just imagine the banter.
I want the fucking turmoil.
The banter of
I want
it
the
would
fucking
so
press
amazing.
Conferences. And I want his fucking ego. And I want him running down the sidelines when we fucking win the fucking Premier League.
Would you...
It's like having the number one up in the air saying, I fucking got... Tottenham with a fucking league.
Can I just say that he didn't win the league with Man United, right? And
no.
Look at the state he left them in.
This is his redemption project, though.
Yeah.
This is
and,
rise from
and
the ashes.
He's going to sign Marcus Rashford for us, and then he'll still not do anything.
No. He'll
and
sign McTominay, and he'll fucking settle our midfield. Don't shut up about McTominay. And Ruben Loftus-Cheek. No. But he did bring Ruben Loftus-Cheek into it, and it was Conte that held him back. Just remember that. Just remember it.
Yeah, he also, let's bear in mind, he sold Lukaku. He sold Kevin De Bruyne. Kevin De Bruyne and Mo Salah.
Third
Kevin
stage.
De Bruyne and Mo Salah.
Third
like,
stage.
He's not going to have time to do that. He's going to come in mid-season. He won't even have a fucking window to do shit in. He will fucking give us a trophy if it gets to that point. Because if it gets to the point where we're firing Pochettino, then this season's fucked.
But
let's just be honest.
The question is, like, you know that if he comes in and he sells a Harry Winks or something, you know that Harry Winks is going to become the next fucking Kevin De Bruyne. Because
no
that
way.
Is that is what Mourinho does. He will... sells players when he's
he'll bring in like fucking Rakitic and we'll fucking
you gotta
win
remember
the
though, he was the one that also purchased Matija Kesman, who turned out to be utter dog
shit. Oh my god, we're just gonna go through every single Mourinho signing and say who was good and who wasn't.
Can
he
we?
Bought Diego Costa for 70
I think
million.
That seems
he made,
to be this point.
He made
anyway.
Damien Duff look good. Like,
hell
really
yeah,
good.
He did. Aaron Robin. Is that a signing?
He's clearly not
Makelele.
A long-term solution.
He made Makelele.
Didn't he sell Aaron Robin because he thought that Andre Schürrle was going to be good?
No, those are two different times.
That's
wrong. It's like 8 years apart. I know where you're coming from.
He's clearly not a long-term solution. He could give us some trophies.
He will give
if
us
we lost
Scott
Potts,
Parker's
I
ready.
Guess, yeah, if we just want to win something and salvage something out of this era, great.
You know what? I will say, if we need to search for a coach, he's number one on the list. Without a fucking doubt. Who else is number one on the list?
Pep Guardiola.
Harry Redknapp.
Yeah.
Allegri.
Yeah.
Can we bring Tim Sherwood back and just fuck shit up again?
We could bring Christian Gross back if we really want to.
Alan Kerber's
no, George Graham.
Are they still alive?
Probably. Okay, on that note.
I told y'all that was the best question we ever had.
On that note, do
I would take if we were in such a fucked up situation, I would take Mourinho. Need the final word.
I would take him.
Actually, I would have the final word because I'm...
Before you, of course.
I think we have an episode title. I would take Mourinho.
No, Nate would take Mourinho.
Or is it Derby or Derby? Even though we got several.
Derby or Derby. Yeah,
who gives a fuck? Okay, so on that note, everybody come early for Sunday because the bar...
What's it called?
The North...
Come early on Sunday.
For the North London...
Derby.
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 Should we just go with Derby?
Sure.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah, let's fuse that together.
Just get real
so
bad.
Get there because the bar will be packed, and you don't want to be standing...
near you.
Yeah, oh, don't sorry. Stand near Tommy.
Yeah,
he just yells the most random shit.
I do feel sorry for your wife, though, because I was yelling a bunch of random shit and calling everybody a motherfucker and a son of a bitch.
Motherfucker!
As long as you don't insult Nebraska football, I think you're fine.
Oh, I haven't yet. But anyways, so thank you for Sam for editing and sound this episode. Anthony for editing or scheduling and production. He will be hosting again for our Labor Day episode.
Today, everybody.
Charlie for music. Kevin for social media. Myself for the back page update. Kimberly for the logo and always the Atlantic Bar and Grill for the use of the recording space. Hit the subscribe button and write us a review on iTunes. If you like our podcast, if you don't, write us a bad review. Any
constructive criticism.
Yeah, any publicity is good publicity. And or wherever you get your podcast. So check us out on Twitter or Facebook at Four Star Spurs. And of course, go to our website at 4starspurs.com. Come on, you Spurs.